My name is Alan. I'm a compulsive overeater. Oh, spotlighted. Okay. Compulsive overeater from originally from New York City, living in Jackson, Mississippi. Before I start sharing my story, let me start with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may be a witness to those who would help with thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Well, let me qualify. I've been an abstinent, see, 2 years, and Christmas Eve will be 9 months. I came into these rooms with 562 pounds. I released 270 pounds. I say released because I say if I lost it, I might find it again. If I say release, I figure it's out there running loose somewhere. Somebody else can have it if they want it. I don't want it back. I have lost 100 pounds too many times. I don't want it coming back again because it always brings friends. A lot of people talk to them, they share their story. They talk about being having trouble growing up. People giving them a hard time about being compulsive, being overweight. Well, I grew up in a family of compulsive overeaters. No one gave me a problem. And I'll tell you a little bit about what that was like. And my theme for my message, the theme for what I'm going to share for later is hope. Hold on to the pain ends. And that fits my story perfectly. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, in an Italian Jewish family. I was born, if you know anything about the kind of family, how important this is, I was the firstborn male grandchild of my generation. I was also born on my grandmother's birthday. And from the day I was born, I was the apple of her eye, could do no wrong. I was her birthday present, as she would say. My grandparents came to this country from Eastern Europe. They got here right before World War II. All my grandmother's siblings got here except for one, my great uncle Abie, and I was named after him. Now, you might wonder what Alan and Abie has to do with each other. Absolutely nothing. My parents gave my English name, which is Alan Drew. My grandparents gave my Hebrew name, which is Avraham Daniel Ben David HaKohen, which will be tested on later, by the way. It's Abraham Daniel, son of David the priest. I come from the bloodline of Aaron, the high priestly lineage. And I've got to change my view here. Hold on a second. This is driving me crazy. I don't like watching myself. Okay. That's better. Okay. Too distracting. Well, all growing up, I was the apple of my grandmother's eye. And from the day I was born, she started two bank accounts. One for my bar mitzvah when I was 13, and one for my wedding, which should have been when I was about 21. I know she had the bar mitzvah planned out in detail. I'm not sure she had the wedding planned out, but she did send me on my first date when I was 12 years old with a little girl next door to see the movie Love Story. So I can't say for sure she had anything planned, but it was a good possibility that something was going on there. Well, all growing up, I also went to Hebrew parochial schools called yeshivas because I was training to be a rabbi. That was her dream. I was supposed to fulfill what her one sibling, my great uncle, that died in the concentration camp, was gonna didn't get to do. I was going to be a rabbi. And my grandmother and I were just super close. They saved all their lives, not for when they were parents, but when they became grandparents. And by the time I came along, they bought a big house in Brooklyn, New York. A 3-story, 5-bedroom, finished basement. We even had a room in the backyard for, which is a big deal in Brooklyn, for a swing set and a tree. Oh. And her way of, if I ever misbehaved, I got sent to bed without a kiss goodnight. Which may not sound very harsh on anybody else, but for me, that just tore me up. But I learned how to fight back because, guilt works both ways. I found a little record of a little boy playing My Grandma Loves Me, singing the song, and when I played it, I got the kiss goodnight, no matter what I'd done. Not that I ever did much. I was raised to be a little gentleman, not a little boy. And all growing up, everything was working fine. I was the apple of her eye. My great uncles and my great aunts, pretty much raised me. My parents were there, but had not very little to do with me. And all those years, Well, I don't remember being spoiled, but I do remember having anything I could possibly dream I wanted even before I wanted it. I remember going to summer camp one year, and in New York, they didn't send you for the weekend, they sent you for the whole summer. And coming back and having an electric guitar and amplifier waiting for me. Now, I don't remember wanting one, but my grandmother figured what 10-year-old boy wouldn't want one? Well, everything was going very smooth until I was about 12 years old. And suddenly my grandmother developed what was called dropsy back then. I believe today it's called congestive heart failure, and passed away suddenly. And my grandfather within a year. Everything still ha kept going at first, because my grandmother, like I said, had planned up on my bits in detail when I turned 13. We had this big to do with the synagogue on the Saturday. Sunday, we had a big party with over 500 people. And just to give you an idea what year this was, it was 1973. And my parents had promised me I could pick up my own tuxedo, which they regretted later. Because you remember, 73, back in the 70s, ugly clothes were popular. So I had a red and blue plaid tuxedo with blue velvet collar and pockets. I thought it was wonderful. They cringed, but I thought it was wonderful. Well, everything had been going fine because everything was planned up to this point. But after my bar mitzvah, my parents found themselves with no plans to follow and having to be parents, both to me and my younger sister. And I went from being the apple of my grandmother's eye, where I could do no wrong, to the main recipient of my parents' neglect and abuse. My mother's way of dealing with life was to get hooked on a prescription pain medicine. And my dad became a child abuser. I won't go into much detail, but basically he covered all the bases: verbal, physical, sexual. Every area he covered it all. And I just couldn't understand why this was happening. My life was falling apart. I still was going to special schools, trying to be a rabbi. Still trying to hold it all together. But the only way I could cope was with food. That and books. I lived around the corner from the library. I used to go to the library once a week with a shopping bag and bring it back full to the brim, because I could lose myself in the books and lose myself in the food. Well, I still spent my senior year living in Israel on a kibbutz, just like a Jewish commune. But my parents didn't have the money to send me anymore. So my grandparents pushing them, they let the family business close. And I graduated a year early, and they had the idea, let's move to Miami, Florida. Things will be different. Well, I don't know how many of you know this, but Miami is not really part of the South. It's just one of the boroughs in New York that floated off when no one was looking. You're either from New York or somewhere in South America if you live in Miami. It's usually the way it works. And we moved down there, and my mother kept saying, things will be different, things will be different. And of course, they weren't. I got a job working temporarily in a factory, because I mean, speaking fluent Hebrew really doesn't qualify you for a lot of things. And about a month before my 18th birthday, something happened to help me decide what to do with my life. My mom and dad were having an argument, which is not unusual, but my dad was smashing a hard plastic cup over my mother's head. That wasn't unusual either. He'd broken her ribs and other things before. But what was so unusual was my reaction. Because one minute he's hitting her with the cup, smashing her with the cup, and the next minute he's down on the bed with my hands around his throat, choking him. I was bleeding from my forehead and from my arm. And to this day, I don't know exactly how that happened. I suppose to me he did it, because I guess I blanked for a minute. But as soon as I realized what I was doing, I let go. And I ran out of the apartment hysterically, shaking and sobbing. Because the one thing I swore I'd never be was like my dad. And I knew I had to get out. So 3 days before my 18th birthday, I got a paycheck. I hadn't told them I got it yet. And I couldn't tell them I was going to move because I never would have got out with both my legs intact. So So about 5:45 in the morning, when everybody was sound asleep, I snuck out of the house, took some of my clothes and possessions, but I took my most important possession. And this will tell you what kind of compulsive reader I am. I took my muffin tin. I had to make sure I had my muffin tin with me. I made really good muffins, and I really liked eating my very good muffins. Well, I moved on my own. They tried to call, so I had to call the police and everything else. But at that point, at 18, what could they do? So I was working the factory. I got another job, fortunately, working in an Italian restaurant, basically helping with cleanup. But within a year, they were training me to be a head chef because it turned out I had a knack for it. I mean, who would think compulsive overeaters would be good with food? I don't know. I just loved it. They would show how to do me do one thing and I could do it immediately. But at that point in my life, when I was 19, I was coming home from work one day, or I should say waddling home from work one day. And somebody as a joke called me Baby Yui out of the car window. Now I don't know how many of you remember who Baby Yui was, but he was a cartoon character. About a 6 foot tall baby duck, tiny bonnet, huge, huge diaper. And for me, that was a straw to break the camel's back. I went home and took a knife to my wrist and tried to commit suicide. I just couldn't face another day like this. Fortunately, God made me a coward when it comes to that kind of stuff. So when I saw enough blood, I couldn't go through with it. And I only ended up hating myself that much more because I couldn't even commit suicide right. Fortunately, God wasn't through with me. Because one of the waitresses I worked with at the restaurant was a friend of Bill's. She was the beverage program. And she knew I needed to go to OA. And she started driving me crazy about going. Till finally, I just said, yes, I'll go to shut her up. Turns out the meeting was right down the street from my house, easy to get to. Went there. The place was dark. Everything was locked up. And no one was there. It's like, yes, I told her I would go. I did. I don't have to actually go to the meeting. I did my part. Yeah, it didn't work that way, though. As soon as I turned around to leave, this dear sweet lady pulled up in her car. I don't even think she turned the engine off before she jumped out and put her arm around me. She was the one that was responsible for unlocking and setting up, and she was late. And she didn't let go of me till I was inside the meeting and everybody was there. And the meeting had started. And I came to that meeting and I was looking for a diet, of course. Well, back in this eight, early 80s, this was in South Florida, everyone was doing reishi, except this one meeting. It was a big book meeting, the only one that I know of in South Florida at that time. And I kept sitting there waiting, listening. When it was done, I said, well, can I have the diet? And they're like, well, we don't have one here right now. If you come back next week, we'll bring it for you. We forgot it. Okay, sure. I said, no problem. Came back next week. Asked again for the diet after the meeting. Oh, I'm so sorry. We forgot it again. Please keep coming back. We'll have it here for you. Well, to this day, I've never seen a gray sheet. But before I knew it, I ended up having a sponsor working the program, and I'd lost almost all my weight. They were sneaky. God, they knew what I needed. I needed to be there, and they got me to keep coming back. At that point in my life, when I was working the steps, I was also looking for answers. Because the God of my understanding was the God I had wasn't working. I couldn't understand why all that what happened to me, he let it happen. And right about that time, when it came time to take the third step, I found a higher power that loved me. Loved me enough to die for me. And it changed my life. God opened the door for me to go to a small Christian college in Bristol, Tennessee. Drove them crazy until I got there because they offered me a full scholarship. And they said nobody ever called every week for the whole summer, double check to make sure it was real. But I did because I couldn't believe it was happening. Went to college. I made sure there's OA there in Bristol before I went. There was until I got there. Right before I got there, the meeting closed. I tried going to open AA meetings. This was the 80s. They didn't know what to do with a compulsive overeater. I tried going to Al-Anon. They loved me. They wanted to mother me. Didn't help. So I didn't have any OA to go to. The only thing I remembered is I had to get off sugar. And I've been off refined sugar since 1984. But I've eaten everything else under the sun to get up to 562 pounds. Let me show you the picture real quick. I'll keep talking as I show the picture. No wrong way to do that. Hang on here, y'all. Where am I? Here. Okay, right one. This is me in my top weight. Now, don't ask me how that chair was holding me up. Don't know. People were praying. It's the only thing I think of. Because I was a size 74 pants. You know, at 562 pounds, that chair should not have held me, but it did. After college, I graduated and came down to Jackson, Mississippi to go to seminary. This is where I met my wonderful wife. We've been married 33 years now. She's my angel. I'll show you a picture of her in a minute, too. But 20 years ago, here, I was diagnosed with autoimmune hepatitis, a very rare liver disease, and given 2 months to live. God had other plans. I'm still here. But I used it as an excuse because of my health issues, keep on eating. Because not only was I that big, but very quickly I ended up in a wheelchair. I do craft shows too. I make jewelry. And I couldn't, because technology wouldn't hold me any longer. And they told me when they put me on prednisone steroids that I'd eventually be a diabetic. And I said, no, I don't eat sugar. That's not going to happen. Well, guess what? They were right. I was wrong. 2 years ago, 9 months and 9 months, I end up in the hospital. 562 pounds. My blood sugar was over 500. My A1C was 11.5. And because of my liver disease, the only kind of medication they could treat me with is insulin. Couldn't take any other pills. And it was a gift. It was a gift because it helped me hit bottom. It's what I needed. It scared the living daylights out of me. And I knew I had to find OA again. Because I knew that was the only place there was any hope. I knew diets didn't work. I hadn't tried many diets, but I had tried one. I should share this with you because it's a fun story. When I was working in the restaurant, I tried going on a diet. Somebody heard, told me about cookie diet. I went to this doctor. He gave me shots, and I had two cookies for breakfast, two cookies for lunch, and he told me to eat a moderate meal, supper. Like if I knew what a moderate was in the first place, I wouldn't be in this kind of shape. But you know, hey, I was having cookies for breakfast and lunch. You know, how can you go wrong? It worked really good for the first couple of weeks until I started eating all the cookies in the first day and then wondering why, you know, I wasn't getting losing any weight. The worst part of it is when I was working in the restaurant, one of the other chefs I worked with as a joke hid one of my cookies on me. Well, this will tell you how crazy I was. I went out in the middle of the dining room during dinner rush, place was packed. Yelling for the owner to come there and fire him on the spot, yelling at the top of the lungs that he stole my cookie. He stole my cookie and had to be fired. Now, if that ain't crazy, I don't know what is. Turns out he gave it back. We made peace, you know, but you don't mess with my cooked food, especially then. Well, I came to OA. Fortunately, it was on Zoom because I'm living in Jackson, Mississippi, and there are no OA meetings here. Came to OA, got abstinent. This is how I was when I first came to the meetings. This was me a couple of months later. And I took that picture because I was very excited about it. It was the first time I actually walked into someplace, doctor's office, on my own power in years. And I sat in a chair with arms. Now, if you've never been extremely overweight, you don't won't understand this. But being able to sit in a chair with arms is a miracle because arms is the biggest enemy of people that are majorly obese, morbidly obese. I mean, I've actually had to leave a restaurant because they didn't have a chair without arms. And I was able to sit in. I didn't worry about it falling. I didn't worry about me breaking it. And it wasn't uncomfortable. And I'm so excited to have my wife take a picture. And here's another picture. Again, with the wheelchair. And this is me later in recovery. And that's my angel with me there. I call her that because we've been through so much together. I wouldn't trade her for anything. I hope she won't trade me either because I'm not as good a catch. And this is me with my old pants, size 74. Now, I don't fit into one leg yet, but I hope one day I will. Now, I'll tell you, losing all that weight was wonderful. Matter of fact, it's the only reason I'm alive today. Because about a year ago, I developed pneumonia. Went to the hospital. The doctors told me straight out if I hadn't lost the 270 pounds, I wouldn't have left the hospital. Unfortunately, the kind of pneumonia I have is not normal. As you can see, I'm using oxygen. It's autoimmune based, very rare. I don't do things like other people. What can I say? If I'm going to do it, I do it right. Okay, I'll do my best. Warmed
You
up.
can take your time. It's just a re
Okay. And it's been a very hard year. Been high dose of steroids. I don't know how I would manage it. You know, because I didn't have to deal with it alone. I'm still here by God's grace. And as they say, any day above you're above ground is a good day. And I believe that. I have a sponsor who told me I had to start doing instead of just action plans, I had to have an attitude plan every day. And that starts with reading the big book and reading acceptance, about acceptance. And that makes all the difference. And I like to say that the weight loss was the only thing that mattered because it was what you come here for. But it isn't. What really is the most important thing is the things that different how my head is. You know, I don't have to live for food. I don't have to focus it from 1 minute to the next. I don't wake up in the morning planning. Well, what am I going to eat this? As soon as I'm done with that, can I have that too? Can I eat the next thing? Do I have enough of this in the house? It doesn't matter. Right now, I'm at the point in my life, which is amazing, is that I have to eat because I have to take my insulin shots. If not, I'm okay if I don't. But I have to take the shots. So I have to eat a balanced diet. And I have to be careful what I eat. Now my blood sugar is down in the normal range. My A1C, the last time I checked, was 5.8, which, if you know anything about A1Cs, that's amazing. It's pre-diabetic. And what I can tell you is that the steps is what really changed my life. You know, steps one, two, and three. Oh, I heard in AA, they called it, they say, I can't, God can, I think I'll let him. And I love that because I have to do that every area of my life. Four, five, six, and seven is cleaning up the house, getting all the garbage together. And I had a lot of garbage to deal with, a lot of pain and a lot of resentment. The next one's, you know, making amends is basically taking the garbage out. Because if you clean up the house, you put it all in bags, but you don't get it out of the house, what happens? It's all over the place again. You got to get it out. And the last three steps were learning how to live my life and using all those steps every day of my life. You know, this program is not hard, but it takes work. It's not complicated. It's simple, but it takes commitment. And, you know, I heard from people like Mark and other people, you know, how do you become an old timer in OA? Basically, they always tell me is that be abstinent for today, don't die, and do it again tomorrow. And if the secret to working this program is really simple, be willing, keep coming to meetings, and do service. You know, this past year, service is what's helped me keep going. It gave me something I was committed to doing and kept me getting out of the bed and keep putting one foot in front of the other. I do about 12 meetings a week. Not everybody can do that. I understand. But I look at it this way. If I'm not at a meeting, I'm not eating. And that's a good thing. And also doing service. Because we can't keep what we have, we don't give it back. And it also gets me out of my own head by doing for others. And I wish I could say that OA opened the gates of heaven and let me in. No, it didn't. OA opened the gates of hell and let me out, is what it did. Hope. Hold on to the pain ends. I'm learning that. I've learned that. And I will be learning that. Lord willing, I'll be around. My wife says her mother lived to be 94. So I've got to hang in there for at least another 30 years because I'm not allowed to go with her and say, take her with me. And we don't do suicide. So I'm not sure how that's going to happen, but I'm working at it one day at a time, working the steps, working the program. And I'll pass. And if you want my theme is hope, because that's what we all need. Thank you.